Well, good morning, and my name is Scott Smith, and I'm with the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in beautiful British Columbia on the west coast of Canada. And I want to thank the organizers for the opportunity and invitation to speak this morning. When I first prepared this, I wasn't sure if it would fit some of the other talks, but after what I've heard in the first two, I think it'll fit quite well. So as the title indicates, we'll talk a little bit about lessons from the past and some ideas for the future. All right, I'm going to talk a little bit about the decline and fall of soil survey in Canada, why it happened, how it happened, and the new evolving reality that we have. Right now, I think it's a reality that exists in other countries as well, but focus on some ideas for the future. And I think, as Alfred indicated, the future is probably a collaboration among a community of users, and talk about some of the emerging technological solutions that will allow us to do that. Well, my name is on this presentation, but really the ideas here come from principally from three colleagues, and interestingly enough, Bob McMillan is a private sector consulting podologist and a bit of a visionary when it comes to future of soil survey. Angela Bedard-Hahn, who is with the University of Saskatchewan, who is a leader in the establishment of something that we're calling the Canadian Digital Soil Data Consortium, and Peter Shute, semi-retired, former manager of the Canadian Soil Information System within Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. So we have really the private sector, the university involved here, as well as government. So I want to start my story with 1978, and this actually corresponds quite well to the that histogram that Curtis showed about when you reached your peak in terms of the number of soil surveys that you published. For us, the story really starts in 1978 when Canada hosted the International Society of Soil Science meetings in Edmonton. That's the only time that Canada's hosted that that set of meetings, now the IUSS meetings. And in a run-up for 1978, we had a tremendous amount of activity that led to the Canadian System of Soil Classification, and this is the same taxonomy we still use today. It's been revised a few times, but the groundwork for that was done in the 70s. And also in preparation for that meeting, Alex McKeague published The History of Soil Survey in Canada, and it follows quite closely the story that Curtis told of an initial start in the early times of the 20th century. Of course, a tailing back of activity during the Depression, and then this massive scaling up that we had in the 1970s. And this is a quote out of that report that says there were 150 Canadian podologists and student assistants in the field in the summer of 1975 mapping soils, and a similar number busy doing correlation cartography data management. So we had 300, a population of 300 scientists working on soil survey in 1975. And it was a very upbeat report. It was sort of pointing that the future was onward and upward, but in fact, a couple of years ago, myself and a colleague from the University of Saskatchewan, Darwin Anderson, updated that history and pointed out that, in fact, that wasn't a plateau that had been achieved in the late 70s. In fact, it was a peak. And that post-1980, our number of people and publications began to decline. Here it is in sort of graphic format, total number in blue, that would include the cartographers and correlators and administrators, and then our field staff. And the steep drop in the blue line really reflects a change in technology from scribed, printed maps using draftsmen and cartographers to the use of GIS in the 1990s. So that dropped off. That was largely a function of changes in technology. And our field personnel stayed quite stable, really, through until 2000 dropped a little bit. We were able to supplement those numbers. But this is the Federal Soil Survey remained really quite active up until the early part of this century. And then that tailing off that you see after 2000, that's entirely demographics. That is because of the individual who was hired in 1975 who was 25 years old is today 65 and retiring. And so today we're really down to just a handful of people, field experienced podologists working in the Federal Soil Survey. So why did this happen? I think primarily it was this reason. I think that by and large, in most provinces in Canada, we never had a legally mandated requirement for soil survey information, unlike what Dave described in the first presentation this morning. And interestingly enough, there are a few provinces that do have provincial soil surveys still active, and in both cases, there's a legal, legislated requirement for survey information. Usually this is detailed information that controls whether a farmer can utilize or not utilize certain management practices. In the early days of the country, just a simple process of inventory was considered to be a valid and honorable scientific investment and endeavor. And of course, once we got through the exploratory phase of soil survey, then there was a requirement really to get to more detail, and these surveys, someone had mentioned, sometimes took 10 years from when the survey was first initiated to the time we had that nice soil survey report, and 10 years was just too long. And then within government, interestingly enough, in our particular department, it was rare that soil scientists ever elevated themselves into senior management positions. Yeah, there were no soil scientists who were in that top-level decision-making rank. We all just wanted to be out in the field, I guess, digging soil pits and collecting soil samples, and not, you know, wearing the shirt and tie and in there on those difficult conversations. And this is human nature, I guess. As programs shrink, then you tend to retrench. But what you should be doing is reaching out, and I think we've really come to that realization. And here's an example of how we retrenched instead of reached out. In the 1990s, we produced the first comprehensive soil map of Canada, and we were a national organization, and we produced a national map. Now, a lot of the information there were limited attributes, but the whole country was covered. As our numbers dwindled and our department said to us, we're the Department of Agriculture, we want you to focus on agricultural land. So in this century, we published the third version of our soil landscape mapping of Canada, and the area in green is the agricultural region of the country. We did a bang-up job on that. We have all the attributes we need to populate things like global soil map grids and this sort of thing, but unfortunately, agriculture only covers 10% of our country. So we have only legacy data in the other 90% of the country, and that has become a real impediment for us. So the evolving reality, the demise of large government soil institutions. So think for a minute, if the NRCS decides to get out of soil survey, what happens? This is what we're facing. We also see the predominance of private sector over government inventories. So it's no longer the top-down government organization that's conducting soil surveys. It's the private sector, and it's largely around development projects, whether this be mining, mining reclamation, hydroelectric projects, transmission corridors, pipelines. You know how much Canadians love to build pipelines. They all employ soil scientists. They all employ soil scientists to help them locate those pipelines. So the total number of soil scientists working in the field today is actually no less than it was 20, 30 years ago. But the result is that we have a decentralization of expertise and a decentralization of information. and luckily, but at the same time, an emergence of new technologies to share information. So, if we want soil inventory to survive in Canada and find a new normal, we need to start with finding ways to collate and share our information in new and open ways. So the future proposal is something called the Canadian Digital Soil Data Consortium, and it is built on the concept of open data, not just that it's available and it's free and it's not copyrighted, but that it's in a system that is interoperable so that many people can access it. The goal of this consortium is to transform how information about soil and land is collected, stored, archived, shared, distributed, and used in Canada using a virtual network rather than a centralized network, crowdsourcing, bottom up, facilitated collective action serving multiple stakeholders. Kind of airy stuff, but truly this is the way forward. Well, we have no choice. This is the way forward. So here's we've mocked up the consortium portal, and it is designed as an interoperable system that anyone can not only access information but contribute information to. So if we were to go and look at this green section here on soils, we see connections. Over to the right, on a whole suite of learning tools, this would be university-based material. And understand, Canada is a much smaller country when it comes to the size and network of our universities. So I'm guessing there's probably a dozen universities in Canada that teach in soil science. So it's not a huge community, and so it sort of lends itself to this kind of approach. So we have the connection to a whole suite of learning resources there. These would be largely universities, and under that would be a suite of applications. It would include government applications, but it would include applications that other people have built. It would include applications that if you wanted to use it, and maybe you wanted to make it better, you could do that. And there's still a role for government. Obviously, agriculture, Niagara Food still maintains the legacy soil data for the country and will continue to do so and will continue to maintain a select number of tools that go along with that. So the consortium is achieved with three infrastructure components, a platform, this interoperable framework, and I'm not a technologist, so there are others that understand the interoperable framework better than I do. But we also appreciate that it's more than just maps and PEDON descriptions. We are now looking at new forms of soil information that we never collected or managed before. Spectral data, for instance, and the growing field of soil biological information. Because we have our university people connected here, information that they collect in the course of doing research, whether it be site descriptions or some of this other ancillary information, this platform is designed to handle it. It's also designed to be a repository. And we had a kind of a scare a few years ago where we actually were looking at the possibility of losing our legacy data, that the Canadian Soil Information System, that the department simply wouldn't maintain it. So there was this kind of fear that we'd actually lose information, which was one of the drivers behind this initiative. So a repository that is secure, not just for soil survey information, but other related soils informations. And then, as I pointed out, a whole series of applications and links to other places. If you're deriving R scripts that might be useful in digital soil mapping, you put those up there and we'll allow others to link and share with your information. So not knowing, obviously, what other people's presentations were, oddly enough, I jumped ahead a little bit here. I wanted to talk about our first focus, and that is going to be on trying to collect our various geo-reference soil profile information for the country. We have 6,000 or 7,000 records in an existing PEDON database. We expect that there's at least double that kind of out there that we know of, and probably double that that we don't even know about. So we will be reaching out here and really focusing on the collection of georeferenced soil profile information as we move forward. We're doing this because we think that this effort represents enormous public good, obviously reduces costs to do this through a consortium. It is a key to our future ability to generate predictive maps. And I heard that in the future, to move mapping along, it's going to have to be digital, and it's going to have to be predictive. And obviously, the point data are so critical to do that. And in so doing, helps us to meet some of our international objectives, like the Global Soil Map Project, for instance, and some of the other related Global Soil Partnership activities in a way that we can't do right now. So I leave it at that. I didn't know that others were going to have lots of scenes of Martian landscapes, but I too had one of these. And I just want to point out that you're looking at the Phoenix Lander here, and it's sitting on the Martian surface, and this is probably the most sophisticated array of soil sensing instruments that we've ever put together. But it's always struck me that we have this large appendage that you can see out there. And so as an old-time soil survey surveyor, whose main tool, of course, was a shovel, it's always kind of satisfying to know that no matter how much technology you have, you still need to dig a hole. And it's true, right? So with that, thank you very much. Yes.
In this bottom-up approach.
Yes. That's the idea. That's the concept.
What do you guys do to QA, QC, and verify that for quality calibration?
You know, it'd be the user community. Think Wikipedia. All right.
I'm going to peer review my Veris map, right?
Your community of users would peer review that. Yeah.
So you guys start stepping up certificate. Like, I mean, if I'm a company that does Veris mapping or an agronomy consultant, are you guys prepared to do some type of certification? Same way as, like, you know, our weather services work, right? We corroboratize our weather very well. Weather Underground absorbs a lot of information from private weather stations, but you have to be certified to join that community. Is there an apparatus that we can build for that, and an infrastructure that we can build for that to certify agronomy consultants beyond just, a certified crop consultant or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're down in the weeds a little bit there, but clearly that is the sort of thing we're going to have to grapple with. Yeah, yeah.
It is with the weeds now.
Yeah, it is with the weeds.
Okay, last question. Bill.
With your emphasis or your calling attention to the decentralization of information and going to a more shared environment, do you face a problem with proprietary restrictions on data from the private sector as a minimizing or at least I know in this country, the agribiz companies have a great deal of information that is not proprietary and it is not available.
Yes, absolutely. That's an issue with privately collected information, and obviously information that can't be shared openly could not be placed up into this environment. This would have to be stuff. Now, we've talked quite a bit to private sector folks, and much of the work they do is for these environmental reviews, which are publicly mandated reviews, and at some point that information becomes public information. So right now, you know, we're not capturing any of that in our central systems, and the idea would be that information that could be would be loaded into this. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.